Thank you, Errol. Man, I wish Errol had more energy. I love when you song lead. You just start us off with good energy and just the way we should be. We should have zeal for the Sabbath. So I appreciate it. I'm sure everybody else does as well. Well, I hope you all had a good week. I know we're all thrilled to hear about the results of Sarah's, Mrs. Oss' surgery, and they're watching. We love you guys. We hope you guys can come back soon, and we're all praying for you as well. So that was just really good news to hear, and I'm sure we're all kind of breathed a sigh of relief. And she obviously needs continued prayers, and I think my dad's going to fill you in on that with the announcements. I recently heard a sermon by Mr. Gary Petty. I think he gave it in November, and he's going through the churches of Revelation 2 and 3. It's one of those sermons that was eye-opening. It left me feeling inspired, but at the same time also corrected. And those are kind of the best sermons and the best messages that you take away from, where you're left inspired, but you're also like, I got to do something about myself. I got to correct something within myself. He covered the church of Ephesus and the warning that they receive in Revelation 2. And I encourage you all to listen if you haven't already. I believe it's on the podcast. He gave it sometime in November. It largely inspired my sermonette today, the content, and also the meaning behind it. So I want to say this before I start. I know there's a lot of meaning, prophetic and otherwise, in these warnings for the churches in Revelation 2 and 3. However, these were messages to church people. For the congregations then, for the seven churches, and for those of us now. So they were messages to churchgoers, just like you and I. For those of us who are baptized and those of us who are not. It's everyone that is here practicing what we believe. It's for us. So let's take a quick look at how the church began at Ephesus, and that's chronicled in Acts 19. So if we'd all please turn to Acts 19. And I won't go into great historical detail about Ephesus, but the city was a metropolis for its time. There was nearly 250,000 people in the city. And the church really became a powerful influence in this powerful city. And Paul reaches Ephesus sometime in the early AD 50s, sometime in the 50s. And he begins teaching those with incomplete knowledge of God's way. And again, this is all told in Acts 19. I just don't have time to go over it line by line. And he begins teaching people with incomplete knowledge, and he just fills in the blanks. He begins in Ephesus at a synagogue. Well, that kind of makes some of the Jews mad, and they kick him out. And he then spends the rest of his time there in a school. And he stays there for 2 years. So he's in Ephesus for years, starting out building this church. Well, let's drop to chapter 19, verse 18 here. And many who had believed came confessing and telling their deeds. Also, many of those who had practiced magic brought their books together and burned them in the sight of all. And they counted up the value of them, and it totaled 50,000 pieces of silver. So the word of the Lord grew mightily and prevailed. So here we are in the 50s in Ephesus. And Paul, he spurs this great movement with the inspiration of God. And the verse about people burning their pagan books is really not insignificant at all. It's quite significant, especially the amount of money behind that. This was a people publicly displaying their exit from the world and their entrance into God's way of life. And many in Ephesus joined this movement. If you keep reading past verse 20, you get to see that the numbers that were growing in Ephesus were impacting the city on an economic level and also a political level. And it's not known how many people joined the church, but what we do know is one of the more populous churches, more dynamic churches. So a lot happened between that time in the 50s to the mid to late 90s. when John writes Revelation, the book of Revelation. And here's a brief summary, and Mr. Petty goes over it well, but if you want to jot down in your notes, here's just a summary of some of the events that happened in between. Roughly 5 years later, Paul meets the elders of the Ephesian church at Miletus in Acts 20. Paul writes the book of Ephesians, of course, what we go to quite often for correction, instruction, all the above. He writes the book of Ephesians roughly 10 years after the church began. And in the mid-60s, roughly 15 years after this church began, Paul writes to Timothy, who was in Ephesus at the time of when Paul writes the letter to Timothy. And one of the main things that Paul mentions to the elders and to Timothy is that the church eventually is going to have to deal with heresy, false teachings, and false ways. He was worried about this. He wrote to Timothy and he was speaking to the elders that you have to be worried about this, that this is coming your way, and even some of the elders are going to be deceived. So here we are now in the mid-90s. I'm talking about the book of Revelation, Revelation 2 and 3. 40-ish to 50-ish years after the Ephesian church begins. So let's turn there to Revelation 2, if you will. Revelation 2. And I'll begin reading in verse 1. To the angel of the church of Ephesus, write, these things says he who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks in the midst of the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your labor, your patience, and that you cannot bear those who are evil. And you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not, and have found them liars. And you have persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary. Wow, that sounds pretty good, right? So Paul warns them, you're going to deal with heresy, you're going to deal with false teaching. So in between that time, it seems like they've been dealing with that. They've dealt with false apostles, false teachings. They've kicked those people out, possibly church splits as well. They've persevered, they've endured, they've survived, and they're not teaching anything wrong. Which makes the next statement a little bit worrisome, even especially for us, right? Nevertheless, verse 4, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent and do the first works, or else I will come to you quickly and remove your lampstand from its place unless you repent. Jesus is saying the church has been through a lot. Our church has been through a lot too, right? Tested and passed on many different levels. False apostles, evil, etc. But you've left your first love. What does that mean? You've left your first love. Here's a quote actually from a book Mr. McCurdy gave me, which I appreciate. Haley's Bible Handbook gives a little bit of insight on the matter. They were becoming indifferent, the church, half-hearted, not yet lukewarm like the Laodicean church, but headed in that direction. So we beat up on the Laodiceans, right? They're easy, low-hanging fruit, all right? Lukewarm, what are you guys doing? But sometimes it gets a little bit uncomfortable with people that are heading that direction, not so much lukewarm, but a little bit just indifferent going that way. So what happened? Well, here's one point Mr. Petty actually brought out in his sermon that I thought really tied things together. Most of those who began the church with Paul in Ephesus, who knew and worked with him in the 50s, were either extremely old or they were dead. It's as simple as that sometimes. And the Ephesian church in the 90s was largely made up of later generations, second, third generation Christians, or people who just weren't there in the 50s. They did not have the burden of creating something. They lost the passion that drove them to publicly align with God. Jesus says, remember from where you have fallen. You're down here now, but remember when you were up there? Repent and do the first works. Go back to your roots. Do what worked initially or find it altogether. Now, how does this correlate to us? I mean, I think some of you can already feel how this correlates to us. It's very a church that's decades old, passed to other generations, maybe losing a little bit of its passion. It can become uncomfortably familiar. And this is a warning to God's people, to his church. It had been tested, it had passed on numerous occasions, but were they thriving or were they just surviving? Again, when I started looking into this, it becomes a little bit uncomfortable. I mean, we like to beat up on the Pharisees, we like to beat up on the Laodiceans, but yikes, is this a letter to us? So I just have two questions. I don't have 2 points. I just have two questions, and they're aimed at different levels and generations within the church, but I'm sure there's certainly crossover. And here's the first question. It's most likely for those who are baptized and who have been in the church for years. We should ask ourselves this. Do I love God's way as much as I did when I first fell in love with it? Do I love God's way as much as I did when I first fell in love with it? Remembering the passion we had around our baptism. We all have so much joy when somebody gets baptized. It kind of brings back memories of your baptism and that passion, that love. It's also like we have so much joy around weddings, right, too. It's just, it's romantic. You know, you see people in the crowd that have been married for 25 years, put their arm around their significant other. It's just everybody, you kind of feel like, oh, I remember. I remember passion. I remember love. Our first Feast of Tabernacles, or our first baptized Feast of Tabernacles. If you were born into the church, your first feast might have been when you were one. So, like, that's not super life-changing, right? But when you're baptized maybe at 20, 21, 25, 30, later on in life, and you go to the feast, oh, that's a different meaning. It's a much different meaning. Is the love and zeal still there? If it began 5 years ago, if it began 50 years ago, not to forget or leave our first love. And the question is relevant for those of you who are recent to this way of life. If you just become familiar with this way, to keep the passion and to continually grow it, this new passion that you've found. And for the younger generation, which I would consider myself a part of, I think I'm going to hit us all a little bit harder because I think sometimes we deserve it. Especially those of us born into the church. Those of us who, you're here because of your parents, really. The choices and the sacrifices and the things that they've done, grandparents included. Here's our question. Do I love God's way as I should? Do I take this for granted? You see, we showed up to an established church. Many of us have not been tasked or taken up the task to build this church. And when you build something, you have pride. You have love for it, just like the people of Ephesus. They had a pride there. They were burning books publicly, saying, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. A lot of us younger people haven't had that moment. We've not sacrificed, many of us, like the previous generations, to attain this way of life. And it's easier to be indifferent of something when you have not built or sacrificed for it. That hurts. I mean, that stings me because I have taken this way of life for granted before, unfortunately. Because we just show up. And unfortunately, sometimes we don't even do that. We don't even do that. And we shouldn't criticize the fact that we are born into the church. It's honestly a blessing. It's a major blessing. And it's just a fact. But we got to see this way of life as the same opportunity as the people who built the church and the people who joined the church, the people who were just recently baptized. They see it as an opportunity. And sometimes we just kind of show up because, hey, I was born into it. I know the Feast of Tabernacles. I know the Ten Commandments. But Jesus is saying, I need more from you. Remember the love. We got to remember, this is our church as well. And it's our responsibility to keep the church's passion for God alive and well. So it's a new year. Happy New Year. Let's begin with some important questions that both begin with, do I love God's way? Because the warning to the church at Ephesus, it's not just for them, it's for us.